And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday. It's the 27th of June, 2023. You're welcome along to another edition of the show. It's another packed one, of course. Coming up just after 10 with Community Garda information, where you're here for the first time. The latest appeals and information from On Garda Síochána, so tune in for that. And that and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation throughout the morning. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25000. Give us a call too on 074 91 25000. Is there something that you want to hear a feature about? You know, we've got our Monday focus where we can jump on a topic that you might find interest. Wellness Wednesday, whereby maybe there's some area of physical or mental well-being that you'd like us to focus on. Talking History with Dr. Joe. Is there a particular topic that you'd like us to focus on? It's interactive, you know, so make sure you keep your suggestions and what have you coming into us. Okay, let's have a look at the newspapers, and we'll start with the Donegal Democrat. Father Paddy Dunn received a huge welcome in Ballyshannon at the weekend after his transfer from Kilmacrenan to the Kilbarron Parish. Father Dunn from Letterkenny replaces Father Cahill in Ballyshannon, speaking at 11 a.m. Mass in Kilbarron Church on Sunday morning. The new parish priest recounted how he got the call from the bishop for his new role. Bishop McGuckian rang me and asked me to go to Ballyshannon, and I want to thank the people for the welcome I've got, he said. I also want to thank the people of Kilmacrenan, and I see a few of them here this morning. I spent a wonderful 13 years there. Okay, that's quite interesting. So we had a few parishioners from Kilmacrenan travel down to Ballyshannon for Father Dunn's first Mass. On to the Derry Journal now this morning, and two burials at civic cemeteries resulted in people being interred in the wrong plots and compensation of €30,000 having to be paid, that's £30,000, having to be paid by Derry City and Strabane District Council, it's emerged. The local authorities released details of the incorrect interments in response to a Freedom of Information request. Asked how many instances had been identified whereby a wrong interment has taken place within a burial plot where another individual has purchased the exclusive rights of burial, the council confirmed that two instances had been identified since 2015. Let me see now. The RTE story continues to dominate the front and insides of the papers. So we're having to dig in and around a little bit to find different stories, but we can't ignore it either. The Irish Independent, government clampdown on spending at RTE after the Tubridy Pay scandal. RTE will have to clearly break down how public and commercial money is spent in the wake of the Ryan Tubridy payment scandal. The government is moving to rein in the independence of RTE bosses and get unprecedented oversight of its finances and management. The RTE board will be given more power to watch the management, and how public money is accounted for will change. The move comes as a string of RTE stars distance themselves from the undeclared payments of €345,000 to Mr. Tubridy by stating their exact pay. And I'll cover that in the next paper, because it's kind of, again, it's kind of a little bit of a bizarre one in that they're talking about massive amounts of money and declaring it as if it's something righteous to do. But, you know, sort of announcing that you're getting paid hundreds of thousands of euro for 4 hours work a week is, I don't know, there's something a little bit right. OK, I appreciate your honesty, but bloody hell, it's rich. But anyway, the Irish Times tells us that RTE presenter Claire Byrne, Joe Duffy and Miriam O'Callaghan have publicly disclosed their respective remuneration packages in response to controversy surrounding hidden payments made by former Late Late Show boss Ryan Tubridy. The disclosures came after RTE revealed last week, as I mentioned, that top earner presenter Ryan Tubridy received €340,000 more than it had publicly disclosed. Joe Duffy, while presenting his Liveline show programme on Monday, revealed he's paid €351,000 annually by the broadcaster. Claire Byrne said she received €280,000 a year. She said on her Today show with Claire Byrne that she is also paid a separate fee of €25,000 for presenting the TV quiz show Ireland's Smartest. So that is, they came out and said that that's the money that they are on. Others did too. Can't find it in that article, just as a flick through. But anyway, listen, parking that for now. It's impossible to ignore because it's all over the papers. It's all over RTE as well. But elsewhere in the Irish Times, remaining outside NATO is beneficial to Ireland on the world stage and helped the country to win a seat on the United Nations Security Council, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has said. Speaking at the Consultative Forum on International Security in Dublin Castle yesterday, Mr. Varadkar said it is debatable whether or not being in NATO makes Ireland more or less vulnerable to an attack, but that it does help in some ways. He said it certainly helps in Ireland's relationship with the Global South, many of whom are suspicious of NATO because of its leading members were colonial powers. It's difficult to know whether Ireland would have won a place on the UN Security Council in 2021 if it was a NATO member, the Taoiseach said. And then he went on to say that there's going to be no referendum on the issue because he says that there is and has never been any plan for Ireland to join NATO. Do you trust that commitment? Because, of course, it is a conversation that's come into sharp focus as of late. 086 60 25,000. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has said there is no official government position on how many genders there are. The Fine Gael leader made the announcement during a debate about the definition of gender as part of wider discussions on the hate speech bill that was passed through the Dáil. The bill will be updated or will update the law relating to the ban on incitement to violence or hatred against a person for certain characteristics, including gender, race or ethnicity. In the bill, gender is defined as including transgender and a gender other than those of male and female. Senator and former Attorney General Michael McDowell has raised concerns directly with Minister for Justice Helen McIntyre, what he called a lack of clarity on the proposed law when it comes to gender. And it'd be no harm really to try and get some wording down on that, because there's some interesting cases happening in Britain at the moment where inspectors are being sent into schools because of people purporting to be something or other. And I'm not saying that with any, I'm not saying that in any way negatively. It's just I can't quite remember, and I don't want to misquote that story. The Criminal Justice Bill 2022, as it is formally called, although I didn't read all of its title, is currently being debated in the Shannon. The Taoiseach was asked yesterday whether the government has an official position on how many genders there are. He said there isn't an official position on that, but I'm sure that will all be debated over the course of the debate in the Shannon. Fine Gael Senator Regina Doherty said last year there are probably around 9 genders when she was addressing the Scottish Parliament Equalities Committee about gender recognition laws in Ireland. Now, 9? I would struggle to get past 4 or 5, I think. But anyway, that's what they're saying. Let us go now to the Irish Daily Star. And the father of 3 children killed by their mother has called for the scope of the inquest into their deaths to be widened to avoid a repeat of the tragedy. As we know, the children, Connor 9, Dara 7 and Carla 3, were killed at their family home at Parsons Court, Newcastle, County Dublin on January 24th, 2020. A previous sitting of Dublin District Coroner's Court in September 2020 heard the 3 young siblings had died from suffocation. Deirdre Morley, a nurse, was found not guilty of their murder by reason of insanity after a Central Criminal Court trial in May 2021. Now, lawyers for the children's father, Andrew McGinley, of course, who has strong Donegal connections, said his wife, Miss Morley, had suffered from mental illness and was under the care of the HSE prior to the desperately sad event. Dublin District Coroner's Court yesterday heard Mr. McGinley wanted the inquest to examine the diagnosis and treatment of his wife's mental illness before the tragedy, his counsel said. The father of the children believed there was a link between the medical treatment received by his wife and the children's death. On now to the Irish Daily Mirror. And this kind of slipped a little under the radar, and I think it's one that is followed quite closely up here and will be of quite a bit of interest in here. So I'll go through this, and I'd be interested in your views on this as everything, by the way. But anyway, electric bikes, so your push bikes that have motors in them, and your scooters. E-bikes, which can go over 25 kilometres per hour and don't need to be pedalled, will soon have to be taxed and insured. But the caveat here is 25 kilometres per hour. I think that's really quite fast, you know. The change is among a number of new road traffic regulations signed into law by President Higgins. E-scooters will also be legalised as a new class of vehicle. Personal powered transporters, as long as they have a max speed of 25 kilometres and weigh less than 25 kilograms. They will remain illegal on public roads. But wait for this. This is actually what's being made law. And this is the bit I think you might find interesting. If these scooters can go 24 kilometres per hour, do you know what I mean? Providing they're under 25 kilometres per hour, they can be legally driven on footpaths. This when the EU passes the change, which could take until autumn. So you will have a situation whereby it will be perfectly legal on your towns and villages, wherever you are, for people to go up and down footpaths at 25 kilometres per hour. And log that, because I know when it starts and you know, the law's not in effect yet, but it will start. It's already happening, but I think we'll start seeing more and more of it now. You could have a situation whereby you could have numerous scooters going up and down main streets, footpaths at 24, 25 kilometres per hour. Now, if there's a lot of them, where does a pedestrian fit into that situation? What do you think about that? Now, maybe I'm missing the mark here, but I think 25 kilometres per hour on a scooter on a footpath is really, really quite quick and potentially incredibly dangerous. I'd be really interested in your views on that. Or maybe that is the future and I am missing the mark. As I say, they will remain illegal on public roads but can be driven on footways. Onboard Planala will get new powers to approve schemes that contravene development plans and the NTA to acquire land for public transport infrastructure to support schemes like Bus Connects. Transport Minister Eamon Ryan said it will make our roads safer for all road users and give legal certainty to those who are choosing to get around on new forms of mobility. So I suppose in a way, for if you're a scooter user or a electric bike user, and I wouldn't really like to go much over 25 kilometres per hour on one of them, you will not need any tax, any insurance. But if they go over 25 kilometres per hour, you will require tax and insurance. Now, as I say, footways, I presume that includes footpaths. Again, as always with these things, a little bit of clarity is lacking. But what do you think? As I say, get involved in the conversation. And we finish with a very sad story. Tributes have been paid to a hero mum who drowned saving her son from the sea. Brave Joanna Wisniewska, 34, dived into the sea and managed to rescue the boy who got into difficulties while swimming at a beach in East Cork. The mum of two from Cloyne in County Cork was sitting on rocks watching 10-year-old son swimming at the beach when the strong current pulled him farther out. And we just really have to be extra careful with the sea, especially as we head into the summer months when everyone's off school. It really can be incredibly dangerous. And educate and learn yourself about riptides and what way the wind's blowing and all that kind of stuff. It could be invaluable life-saving information. Tomorrow morning, the informal European Parliament group on the legislation of cannabis for recreational use will hold an online event to outline recent legislative developments in this policy, both inside and outside the European Union. We're joined on the programme by MEP Luke Ming Flanagan. Luke, thanks very much for joining us. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for discussing this topic.
Right. You'll be advocating, presumably, for, and you have been, for the legalisation of cannabis for recreational use. That goes beyond, presumably, and pardon my ignorance, decriminalising something.
Yeah, it certainly does. Decriminalisation, for me, wouldn't actually go far enough. It would still leave drugs in the hands of the sale of drugs in the hands of the criminal underworld. It would deny us a taxation stream. Let's say, for example, they have legalized in Colorado, very similar population to Ireland, and they take last year they took over 400 million euros in taxation. So yeah, I would be calling for legalization, proper regulation and taxation in the same way as we treat alcohol.
Now, I'm a bit conflicted on this. I don't really have a position on it as such, Luke, but what I do know is I would speak from time to time, you know, to addiction counsellors and that type of those type of people in that area, and they talk about how the people they deal with, and often the journey for someone into addiction is they might start off with cannabis, become dependent on that, either stay on that and seek treatment or move on to other drugs. I mean, we both recognise that does happen, but do you believe that legalising cannabis would not have any material impact on the numbers or the problems, or what's your views?
Well, first off, from the point of view of the gateway theory, I mean, if you want to apply the gateway theory, and the gateway theory works on the basis that the first drug that people use is cannabis. The reality, though, is if you want to look at the gateway theory, the first drug that people use in Ireland is alcohol. So, I mean, the logic there would be that if banning a substance prevents progression onto other drugs, less harmful and more harmful drugs, well, then you would also apply that to alcohol. But you don't. And the reason why you don't is because they actually tried that in the United States of America, and it caused far more problems than it solves.
Yeah, but we do see, and I'll let you continue your point because I'm really interested to hear what you have to say, but we do see, like, the starting point shouldn't be everyone boozes so we can do this, that and the other. We're seeing in Canada now, and quite rightly so, whereby, you know, alcohol is being... people are being told the truth about alcohol, that it is cancer causing, that it does create serious problems, to try and break that sort of relationship between people and booze. So, you know, maybe we should be changing our attitude to alcohol rather than using it as a comparison to cannabis.
I would be an advocate of changing our attitude to alcohol. I would, and I always have been, an advocate of not allowing advertisement of alcohol, because to me, advertising is the ultimate form of pushing by the most skilled pushers in the world, by people who are experts at getting you to purchase something. So for me, we shouldn't go down the same road as alcohol with it. What I'm talking about is harm reduction. What I'm talking about is having the safest possible situation where people know what they're using, where they know who they're dealing with, where they're not in a situation where they could potentially also be sold other drugs like cocaine, etc. But obviously, some people do have problems with cannabis. Some people have problems with other drugs. But for me, the worst possible environment to help these people is under the current environment, where if you do have a problem, if you go for help, you are potentially left open to getting a criminal record. And in particular on cannabis, when you talk about a criminal record, you've got to look at the overall benefits and harms to society. And you have to look at the harms to society that prohibition of cannabis has caused. In Ireland, and the Department of Justice or the Department of Health can't give you solid figures on it, but definitely over 100,000 people in Ireland currently have a criminal record for possession of cannabis. That prevents them, if they honestly apply on a job application for any serious job, whether that be a teacher, whether that be working as a social worker, they will not get that job because this will show up. It also prevents people from travelling. It also prevents people who are in situations where they're looking for rights to see their children, where they can't see them. So it has a very, very significantly negative impact on people's lives.
But I mean, that's how the law...
that prohibition has.
Yeah, and that's how the law is designed, isn't it? It is to... something that's illegal, if you do it, there is consequences. But I take your point that you believe that they are too severe and too impactful. So in the last couple of minutes, because I know you've got other appointments, what would you like to see? Like, what in Ireland, if you could wave a magic wand, where would cannabis be available? From what age could you get it? How would the price or strength or revenue be determined? Like, what would you see as the perfect situation in Ireland, for an example?
Well, look, I suppose the good news is, unlike when I started off on this campaign about 25 years ago, it was all theory. Now we have practical models put in place in countries around the world. And I personally would prefer a model similar to what they have in Malta, which there is a situation where you're allowed to grow four plants for yourself. But if you don't want to do that, you can join a club. And in these clubs, they can grow multiples of that amount for people. You can go to the club and you can source it there. Alternatively, you could follow a purely commercial model like they have in Colorado or like they have in other states around the world, or you could follow what they do in Canada. But the reality is, this is happening. It has already happened in Malta. It has happened in Uruguay. It's happened in Canada. It's happened in many states in the United States. At the moment, they are, and this is what the conference will be about tomorrow, they are looking at doing it, and they will do it in Czechia within the next year, in Germany within the next year, in Luxembourg within the next year. So things are changing on this issue. And we currently have a Citizens Assembly on on drug use at the moment. And it's clear to be seen from the 99 members of that assembly that opinions have also changed in Ireland. And I have to say, I'm happy to see that Fianna Fáil seem to be moving in a direction of decriminalisation. And I have to say that I think this is now going to happen. The question is, how will it happen? How will we do it? And how soon do we do it? But for me, I would say the sooner the better. The money needs to be taken away.
OK, you've muted there. I just have one very final question for you before I let you go, if you have time. Luke, you've muted there. OK.
Far more safely.
OK, very finally, I enjoy a drink. Love it. Love going into a pub, socialising. But if I was told today that I can't drink anymore, I could. That would be OK with me. You like to smoke cannabis. If you were told today that, look, at for whatever reason or other, you can't smoke cannabis anymore or however you consume it, could you do that?
We're saying in the morning you could give up drink if you wanted to. Sorry.
Yeah, and I was just simply asking, could you comfortably give up cannabis in the morning if you had to?
Yeah, I certainly could. But there's one thing I couldn't give up, and I could also give up alcohol. I couldn't give up my morning run. I couldn't give up my 3 outdoor swims a week, even in the middle of winter when the water is frozen. I couldn't give up any of that. But the reality is, if people do choose to do it, they shouldn't be given a criminal record.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have their lives destroyed. And the criminal underworld should not be benefiting out of that. Our school system and our health service should be benefiting from the tax that we can get from this.
All right. Listen, Luke, thanks very much for your time. Take care of yourself. I do appreciate it. All right. That is MEP Luke Ming Flanagan there. What are your views? Should cannabis be decriminalised? Would you like to see a model whereby, if you wanted to, you could grow 4 plants, was it a year? If you didn't want to become a horticulturalist, you could join a club and have access to it that way. Luke Ming Flanagan has, I don't know, do you call him Luke or Ming? Anyway, Luke has advocated for the legalisation of it. Good morning, Greg. Do some research and you would find out that cannabis has been proven not to be a gateway drug, so please stop it and do some research. Listen, it's not my opinion. What I said to Luke quite clearly, firstly, I said, I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of it. But secondly, what I said was is that I am conflicted. I can't quote myself directly. I'm conflicted because I have people who work with addiction and in counselling that sit across me at this table, experts in that area, and they state that. OK, so that's what I was quoting. And I made it quite clear that I wasn't saying that it was a gateway drug, that I said I was conflicted because people who I would trust who work in that area suggest it is. OK, so just to be clear on that. Good morning, Greg. Cannabis should be legal. Never any trouble with it does people, unlike drink. What's wrong is the people who haven't a clue about it or have never tried it are the people with the loudest voices. We all know it's banned because you can grow it yourself. Not many people growing tobacco in Ireland. OK, our next guest coming up very shortly. All right. OK, big news there will now be a temporary ambulance base to start and finish in Buncrana, the second biggest town in Buncrana. It was confirmed today that that confirmation has been received from the National Ambulance Service that they plan to locate a new physical base in Buncrana from September of this year. Right, Councillor Rena Donaghy joins us on the programme now. The significance of this news, Rena, and good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, this is really great news for Buncrana and Inishowen. And it will build on the day ambulance service that we have in Buncrana at the minute. Now, currently, the Buncrana ambulance operates from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and it starts and finishes in Cairndonagh. And then they're dynamically deployed then from Cairndonagh to Buncrana. So over a year ago, Minister McConnell Logan and myself proposed to the National Ambulance Service and to Minister Stephen Donnelly that the old doctor's surgery, which is owned by the HSE, would be an ideal site for the ambulance base. And now that we have the new state-of-the-art primary care centre, which the doctors have moved into from the old surgery, that is now vacant. So the project is currently at feasibility study, estate offices. But interim permission to use that is now granted. So at the minute, currently the ambulance is located on the grounds of the community centre here in Buncrana, better known as the nursing unit. And this will now allow the National Ambulance Service to start and finish their crews in Buncrana instead of Cairndonagh.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, so obviously you can have the ambulances and you can have the location, be it temporary or permanent, but the key issue here is staff as well, and there are some positive developments in that regard.
Yeah, that's right. In addition, the National Ambulance Service plans to further extend the operation hours of the Buchanan base to include a night shift. That will mean a 24/7 operational cover for Buchanan. So they're currently engaged in planning and discussions with staff representatives on working towards having the base operational, and that's from September of this year. It was meant to be next year, but now we've got that brought back to September of 2023. So this is tremendous news for the people of Buchanan and the surrounds, and I want to thank Minister McConnell-Logue and the HSE for working with us to bring this to such a great conclusion, because as you know, Greg, Buchanan is a very large town. Mm. It's the second biggest town in the whole of Inishowen. It's the third largest town in the whole northwest region of the country. So the peninsula is the biggest in Ireland, and it's bigger than a number of counties. Our population here in Buchanan, if you include the environs, is over 8,000 people. So, and we have three nursing units here, and that accounts for 120 infirm people before you deal with anything else. So I think Buchanan more than deserves what we are getting in September. And it's significant. It's really, really great news for the whole of the peninsula.
All right. Thanks for your time this morning. Councillor Rena Donaghy there, 0866 25,000. Many of you have commented on that on the past. Do you welcome that news? Does it go far enough for you? Right, some more comments coming in here. E-scooters on footpaths. It is illegal for a pedal bike to be cycled on a footpath, as it is a motorised bike. Footpaths are for people travelling by foot. If they are considering allowing e-scooters on footpaths, they are opening a can of worms for bikes as well. What are they doing to protect pedestrians here? Most often the footpaths are not wide enough for what they are proposing. Now, I'll double check the wording of it. It says, because I don't want to mislead anyone either, but that was my reading of it. Where is the paper now? Footways is footpaths, isn't it? Help me out here. You know, I'm not an expert on these things. But it says footway. Footway, so maybe it's not the same as a footpath. A caller says speed vans on footpaths, whatever next. Speed ramps. Will we have speed ramps on footpaths? Greg, he's getting too much airtime. For God's sakes, how much suffering does Luke McFlanagan want to inflict on our young people? That comes in from Councillor Michael McClafferty. We might have a chat with him a little later on to see as to why he disagrees so strongly. Right, okay. We asked a question on behalf of a listener, and the question was, hi Greg, did you ever get to find out why the motor tax office is only open Tuesday and Thursday, Lifford Motor Tax Office, and they only open about 5 hours a day at that? Right, so this has come up time and time again, and I committed to you to get an official response, so that's what we endeavoured to do. And we got this response for the council, or from the council. The motor tax offices are open on Tuesdays and Thursdays weekly between 9:15 and 12:15 p.m, that's 3 hours, and 1:15 to 3 p.m, which is an hour and three quarters, they say. The opening hours reflect the move to the online motor tax service, which almost 80% of motor tax renewal customers are choosing to use. Customers can avail of the online service 24 hours, 7 days a week. In addition, the postal renewal service is also still in operation for customers as a renewal option. So it seems for in-person tax renewal, the writing is on the wall. Interesting statistic, 80%, almost 80% of motor tax renewal customers are choosing to go online. That being said, the 20 plus that want to go in to a physical office, I think is really, really quite significant. And many are sort of being maybe encouraged, is that the word, into using online, perhaps even if they don't want to. All right, more texts coming in on the RTE pay scandal. I pay my TV licence. I paid it last Tuesday. I'm livid with myself. Next year, I'll enjoy a free trip to Mountjoy. Free light, heat and food for a week. Greg, everyone knows their monthly net wage, as most people in the real world are waiting on it every month. Ryan Tuberty should be like Dee Forbes. Resign. Is that... I don't... It's difficult to see his pathway going forward, because, as I say, There are protests from RTE staff today outside regional offices and in Dublin. It is they that seem particularly peed off about this. You know, I mean, the public can have their say, and some people are rallying in behind Ryan and others not so much. But the staff themselves are the ones that seem to be most hurt by this, as is reflected, as I say, by their protests later. A caller says, when they get revenue to collect the TV licence, we can talk about it forever. Another, there's no point in politicians going on about being misled, because before every election they go around all the houses saying they are going to do this and that, but when they get into government they don't do it. Is that not misleading the people too? It's an interesting point. Hi, will Miss Forbes now be entitled to a golden parachute termination payment, or will any payment just be brushed under the carpet? It's an interesting question, and one which jumped out at me, and I don't know, Peter, as to what a severance package is. Has she served her term? I probably should know that. I presume she's entitled to a pension. She's working for a state agency, so she's entitled to a pension at the very least. I'm not sure if that would be impacted by her resignation. But as the point was made yesterday, I presume it was within the gift of the board not to accept that resignation, and she then would have been compelled to go to the Oireachtas's committees. That being said, she's not compelled now, and there's about as much chance of her going in front of those committees this week as there is me getting a perm. RTE scandal has a lot of similarities, say this listener, to Garda corruption in Donegal. They'll be promoted and put on higher scales of pensions, politicians investigating them. No judge or jury, blind leading the blind, they say. Again, 086 60 25,000 if you want to get involved. What's wrong with people? Reading here that Italy's culture minister is leading an outcry of anger. Wait till you hear what these people do. A tourist was filmed smiling while carving his and his girlfriend's name into, wait till you hear it, a Colosseum, the Colosseum in Rome. The government official wants the man to be identified and sanctioned, calling his actions unworthy. In the footage, he's heard being called stupid. So someone went to the Colosseum in Rome, and you know the history of that building, that structure, and carved he and his girlfriend's name into it. I was asked to mention, and I want to mention, that there is a jumble sale taking place. All proceeds are in aid of TJ's Wish to Walk. So if you want her walk, to help her walk, you go to St. Patrick's Hall, Drumkeen, this Saturday. It's from 1:30pm till late. So that's a jumble sale. All proceeds in aid of TJ's Wish to Walk. It's in St. Patrick's Hall, Drumkeen, this coming Saturday, 1:30pm till late. They are in need of household items, free face painters, mascots and cake bake stalls. Contact any committee member or TJ Wish to Walk Facebook page if you want more information there. Now, hi there. I nearly choked on my spuds when I saw a letter from a spokesperson for the hospitality sector saying an increase in consumer tax will be punishing hard-pressed holiday makers. Is he having a laugh? I don't see his industry offering reasonable prices to help out during these difficult times. I don't remember seeing that sector passing on the reductions in VAT they were allowed. That comes in from Brian. It's a toughie because there is this general line that's put out there that it's only a small number of people in the hotel industry that are price gouging, and they're primarily based in Dublin and other population centres. Do you believe that's the case, or do you think there's gouging right across the industry? 086 60 25,000. Okay, we will be back with our next guest very shortly. A very good morning to Paul and to Cam. Cam watching with us in New Zealand on Facebook. Actually, I beg your pardon, Cam, you're watching on YouTube. Thank you very much for joining us. Good to have you on board. He says, don't legalise cannabis, or they say, I'm not sure if it's a he or a she, don't legalise cannabis. It stinks areas out. There's drug driving, and then it does lead to other drugs. That's Cam's view. If you want to watch the show, get onto our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and you can watch on your phone, tablet, laptop, big screen, smart TV, or your Fire Stick. We're across Facebook as well, and primarily here we broadcast across the airwaves of the Northwest. We'll be doing that with our next guest after these. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're joined on the programme now by Natalie Barry, Animal Care Manager with Seal Rescue Ireland. Good morning to you, and thanks so much for joining us, Natalie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Good morning to you.
Happy to be here. Yeah, great stuff. What's the role of Sea Rescue Ireland? They cover the whole country, I presume. What kind of work are you engaged in? What type of activities?
So the main activity really is just the rescue and rehabilitation of sick, injured and orphaned seal pups. So that's kind of our main goal. And as you mentioned, we are the only seal rescue centre in the Republic of Ireland. So we do cover all of the Republic's coastline, ranging from all the way up in Donegal down to Kerry, Cork, everywhere. So we'll transport sick, injured pups. They might be orphaned or ill. Or emaciated. We'll transport them into our hospital here. We're based in Corktown in Wexford. And then we'll rehabilitate them back to full health and we release them back to the wild. So all of our pups go back to the wild. We don't keep any of them on site here. So our main goal is to get them back to where they belong.
Yeah. And was it around about 150 seals rescued last year?
Exactly. In the last 12 months, it was 148 was our last final count. So quite a lot. And we tend to be getting more and more every year. Our numbers are going up and up and up. So it's kind of an indication. Maybe the people just know about us, so they know to contact us. But unfortunately as well, it is an indication of their environment degrading. So they more need our help more than previous years, unfortunately.
What are the greatest threats then to seals? What could be changing that is a threat to them?
The biggest one we find is just climate change. I know we're all sick of hearing about it, but because of climate change, we're getting more frequent and more severe stormy weather, like we've all seen it ourselves, especially in the last couple of weeks. And because of these storms, quite often the pups can get separated from the mums. They can also be thrown up against rocks and get injured. So we can get broken flippers, broken toes, broken everything. And they can get quite exhausted in the water. So they are mammals and they can drown. So if they're swimming and there's really, really rough seas and they can't find a space to haul out onto, they can actually just be exhausted and drown as well. So climate change being the big one. And the second big one after that is just human disturbance we see a lot. So people oftentimes with good intentions, they don't realise, but they can kind of harass the pups trying to help and end up scaring mum away or just stressing the mums out as well. So sometimes if the mums are a little bit too stressed and they're spooked by people or dogs, they will unfortunately just abandon the pups. So that happens too. And even the adults getting disturbed, usually when they're up on land, they're there for a reason. They need to rest and recuperate before they can go back into the water hunting. So if they're disturbed a little bit early, they're losing all that vital energy and they're not saving that energy for hunting. So that's kind of the two big problems we see.
You know, outside of humans, you could also probably make an argument. Do they have any natural predators?
Seals in Irish waters are apex predators. So there are other larger, say, orcas that have passed through Irish waters, but they're not actually residents in Irish waters. So seals are kind of at the top of the food chain here. So luckily, they don't really have any natural predators, so they should be in charge. But because of that, they do regulate the food chain. So they're a really, really important part of our ecosystem. And they control all the fish populations beneath them by hunting and killing the sick and injured fish, so it keeps the populations nice and healthy. So the whole ecosystem it's a really a circular ecosystem and they all rely on each other. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important that we do protect our seals.
Now, what is the public attitude to them? Because you do paint a rosy picture of them sort of cleaning up almost fish debris, right? But I would know from speaking to commercial and leisure fishers that they don't really like the seals too much, that they can destroy rivers and another. I mean, what is the general public attitude to seals, do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, there is a lot of kind of misinterpretation. Everyone likes to kind of use the seals as a scapegoat, and fishermen are seeing less and less fish in Irish waters, and the kind of seals are the easy ones to blame. But unfortunately, when you actually look at the numbers of how many fish that the seal population take out of the water, it's around 50,000 tons, and that seems like a huge number. But when you compare it to Irish fishermen being 3 to 4 million tons, and then international trawlers in Irish waters is upwards of 50 million tons. So that 50,000 doesn't seem like a lot when you compare it to what we're doing. So we have these huge trawlers and we can take tons and tons of fish out of the water in one go. Whereas the seals in Irish waters, they can only fish one or two at a time. So they're really not the ones doing the damage to the ecosystem. But unfortunately, they do get the blame sometimes. But we have to remember that these are not evolved alongside all of the other fish populations. So ideally, in an ideal world where we don't exist, the ecosystem would be in perfect balance. But unfortunately, us as humans, we're the ones doing the real damage by taking loads of fish out. And again, that's another reason why our seal populations are crashing. There's just not enough fish for them to find. Now, luckily, our seals are in good stock, but unfortunately, common seals, their populations have been in decline in Irish waters in the last few years. So it would just be a shame to lose them, really. They're very charismatic. And in general, we find that people have a pretty positive outlook. There's only the real kind of old-fashioned kind of mindset that the seals are the problem. But generally, most people that we interact with on a daily basis, they love the seals. They're one of Ireland's few megafauna. We don't really have that many big mammals like that. So they're very charismatic, and people do tend to love them, and they love seeing them in the water and on their walks and up on the beach. It's always a nice treat. So generally, there's a pretty positive outlook to seals, we find.
Right, OK. So you're asking the public to help to protect newborn seal pups this summer. And do they are they... Generally speaking, is this the, I was going to say the lambing season, but you know what I mean, the birthing season. Is it specific to a time of the year?
Yeah, exactly. So we have two native species in Ireland. We have the common seal or harbour seal, it's known as, and the grey seal. So starting in June and July, that's the common seal's pupping season. So that's the species that I was saying they're in decline. So it's really important to protect them. So they only pup for June and July, and they're very, very small when they're born. They're only between 8 to 12 kilos, and they'll stay with mum, and they'll follow her, and they'll learn from her by watching her hunting and eating. So it's really important that they stay together. So this is kind of the crucial time now when they're being born, that we want them to stay with their mums. Obviously, we can look after them if they do get separated, but our care is really only second class compared to mum's care. So we just wanted to kind of put an alert out so people are aware that they might see little small pups on the beach. And if you do, it's always best to keep your distance. So if mum is around, she doesn't get spooked, or this pup doesn't get stressed and run into the water and become exhausted. And we do actually have a rescue hotline that's 24 hours a day. So we always say, if you see a seal, even if you think it's a healthy seal, it's always good to give us a call, give us a text, WhatsApp, anything, and we can let you know. And if the pup does need help, we can organise a trained volunteer to attend to the pup and assess it and lift it and bring it to the centre if it does need to be rescued.
Now, some people might think they're cute and, you know, quite friendly and passive looking. Perhaps maybe they are, but... seals can bite, and they can carry the bacteria and other germs. Well, bacteria is a germ, but you know what I mean. That can be harmful to you or your pets. So that's a very good reason to stay away from them, but also to keep your animals away from them.
Absolutely, yeah. That's another big problem we have is dogs, dog attacks with them. Obviously, it's natural for dogs, and sometimes you might not realise there are seals on the beach. The seals can give a really nasty bite too. They are carnivores, and they have these big, sharp canines, and they have a really nasty bacteria in their mouth that can cause an infection called seal finger. So fishermen used to get it way back when, and it could even cause like a limb to fall, like a finger or a hand, or even to like rot and fall off. So if anybody does get bitten, they need to go on antibiotics straight away. So we at the centre, if it does ever happen, it's rare, but if it happens, we do need to go on antibiotics. And it'd be the same for a dog as well. They would need antibiotics. So it's really important, yeah, for the safety of the dogs and the seals, just to keep them separate and away from each other.
All right. Can you tell us anything interesting about seals that we might not know?
Well, seals are really cool. I think everything about them is interesting, but maybe that's just me. So the seals we have in Irish waters are called true seals. So the difference between them and, say, sea lions and fur seals is the way they move. So they can't actually walk. Like, you know, the way sea lions will almost walk on their front flippers, true seals, like the seals we have, can't do that. So they kind of hump along the ground. You'll see them like bouncing on their bellies, and we call that galumphing. And I think it's really funny because it looks exactly how it sounds. They're like galumphing around quite awkwardly on land.
Kind of looks like me trying to get into the sea, but anyway. All right. 087-1 95 5393 is the 24-hour rescue helpline. Natalie, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thanks for your time. I love the
brilliant
passion that you
thank
have for
you
these
so much for having me.
Creatures. All right,
love
take
you.
Care. Bye-bye. Natalie Barry, Animal Care Manager with Seal Rescue Ireland. Okay, Karen's with us. Hi, Karen. Are you there? Yes, you are there, Karen. Hi. Right, okay. Why did you get in contact with us? It was in relation to an issue we've covered on the programme here before. Well, you explain it too in your own words. It's better that way, Karen. No, that line is...
The defective...
Oh, sorry, Karen.
Can you hear me?
I can, but I've been speaking to myself because I didn't have your fader up. So take it away there, Karen.
Okay, so I'm one of the defective concrete block homeowners.
Yeah.
We have been waiting on confirmation from, or even an update from the council since September. I know there are hundreds of others waiting on updates for over 2 years, and they haven't been able to get in contact with anybody. When you contact the office, they give you out a generic email that it might take 6 weeks to get back to you. Our engineer couldn't get in contact with the engineering team, and then eventually... when we did think that there was some sort of movement, it all went dead quiet again. So we're waiting 10 months. Other people are waiting up to 2 years. And the council made a commitment when they got through to the Pyrotite issue with the housing department that they would process all the applications that they have before we move on to the enhanced scheme. That hasn't happened. I've heard, I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, that about 400 applicants got email through on Thursday, which was really generic, saying, "Dear applicant, insert the name," and then a very generic email out to people that are really suffering with their mental health, have no idea how they're going to fix their homes, have no idea how to plan. And it said that they had engaged with your engineer, they had engaged with the team, and that just hasn't happened. So now we're sitting in a situation where... we have to wait until the enhanced scheme is brought into law. Still hasn't happened.
Mm.
The regulations still aren't there. It's supposed to be happening this week. But what has happened now is we've all paid out this money, 6,000 to 7,000. Yes, some of us have got it back, 90% of it back. But we have wasted that whole time without our council supporting us to process our applications to then hand it over to the housing agency, and we're back to square one. We have no idea when we're going to get an update on it. So I would just like to know from the council what supports are in place. Are they aware of the complete turmoil people are in to send out really generic, bland emails for a real life acting issue? And I know we've covered it many times before, but I'm really concerned about the people that were waiting on that information, and then it's just so impersonal. Mm. There's no plan for what's happening.
It doesn't take into account the devastation someone might get opening that letter, thinking that maybe something is happening and it's a square one situation. What I mean, do you think they need to change how they're communicating? Obviously, the solution to this is that everything is fast-tracked and there's clarity and we know what's going on. But, I mean, do they need to look at how they're communicating with people, in your view, Karen?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there is no communication with the council. You ask anybody that tries to get in contact with them. They only take calls on certain times. If the email comes through, nothing comes back. We get updates from the council via MAC Action Group, which is not their responsibility to give. The update should be out to all applicants. I mean, we were told how many applications were due to be processed through an update through councillors. That's never communicated to the applicants themselves. So nobody knows where they are in the process. I know applications that went in after mine have been approved, but I haven't been given a reason why mine was stuck. I was never asked for any further information, so there's no rhyme or reason to what's going on.
Right.
And there hasn't been a fair response from the council at all.
Okay, Karen, listen, we're going to make inquiries ourselves as well to try and get some clarity on the situation. I'm sorry you're going through this. It's so bloody distressing, and you shouldn't have to, Karen, you and the thousands of others. Thanks for helping us highlight that again.
Thank you very much.
We can keep going back to it as often as people want us to. It's such an important issue. Right, okay. We'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.